Welcome to All the Things with Kristen Schindler. We all have things. Doesn't matter if we're married or single, if we have no children, or if we have 10. Things in life can be overwhelming, and sometimes we just don't know how to navigate them. So each week, you're going to hear stories of hope, of inspiration, and of people navigating the same things that you and I deal with day in and day out. Their stories may sound different than ours, or they may sound just like us. Either way, each week this podcast is going to pour into your heart with hope and encouragement. We are so glad that you are here. Welcome, friends. Welcome to the next episode of All the Things with Kristen Schindler. I am so excited to have my special guest, Michael Mooney, with me today. Michael, you and I met a very long time ago. I was a new parent. And I think you weren't even a parent yet when we met.
Yeah. So we just had our fourth child turn one in May.
Oh, and I've had the opportunity to see, and I didn't even put the connection together, but your family and our family was part of a co-op. And I actually had your oldest little guy in my preschool class for a recess class. And I saw the last name and I was like, I wonder if that's Michael's little boy. And it was. And so it was just neat how our paths crossed again. So I'm really, really interested because you and I found each other when you opened a business long ago when my oldest was, I think he was third grade at that time. And he was struggling with some, different learning issues and things like that. And you had opened this business and it was right in town and we took the opportunity to use your services. But before we talk about like what you do now and all that, could you just kind of take us back a little bit and tell me, and tell our listeners, what was your childhood like in terms of learning? Cause I think that's really interesting to see like what your background's like and how that situations over time kind of brought you to where you are and what your purpose is in life now.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And it's an interesting relationship between my childhood. It's directly linked to what I do with my life. I don't even say for a living, because it's way more than that. It's really what I do with my life. It's all one track. I've gone a lot of different directions in my life, but it all kind of came to a climax of working in this industry, for lack of a better word, that works with kids that struggle with the exact same stuff that I struggled with as a child. So when I was a little kid, I was very, let's say my parents would describe me as sweet and smart and fun. Every parent's proud of their kid, and my parents were no exception. But by the age of about 9 years old, my parents could tell something was off. Something wasn't clicking. And it was somewhat educational. I mean, I had done well the first grade, second grade, third grade. I had straight A's and it all came very easily. But when it stopped being about just basic math and learning to read, it started being more about comprehension and more about reading to learn and more required more sitting and more focus, and homework started being a real thing. They noticed something's not right. He's not connecting to the information. He can't sit still through an entire day of class. And back then, ADHD was not a thing. It just, nobody talked about it. Nobody knew what it was. At least not in Troy, Illinois, where I grew up. And so for my parents, it was a struggle. I mean, they asked a lot of questions to a lot of people, and we tried counseling and we tried therapy and they tried, tutors and exorcists and everything they could get their hands on to try and figure out what was going on with me. And it wasn't just academic. It was also sensory problems. I was wearing shorts and that's all I would wear. And it could be 10 degrees outside and I'm standing at the bus stop and I'm that weird kid who's wearing shorts. and a t-shirt because I had no temperature regulation. I didn't feel it, and I also couldn't stand the feeling of jeans on my legs. And I had social problems, and I was the weird kind of awkward social outcast that people just didn't want to be around. Kids didn't want to be around, and I couldn't make friends, couldn't keep friends, and that was all very confusing. So, after several years of that, at the age of 12, my parents took me to a pediatric neurologist in St. Louis, and he put me through a battery of tests, and he diagnosed me with severe ADHD. And there was talk around the concept of Asperger's, but they didn't assign that. I don't think as a diagnosis. But I, looking back with what I know now, I was a classic case of Asperger's as a child. And
Interesting.
if you meet me, most people go, "That's impossible," because I'm kind of an extrovert and I'm pretty comfortable in my skin and I like being around people, and it doesn't make sense. And there's an entire story about that. But so my childhood really started being defined at 12 by ADHD and social problems and impulsivity and all of the symptoms that go along with that. And I'm pretty sure I was the first kid to have to go to the nurse's office to take Ritalin in the Triad School District, or at least I remember there being a significant battle to get that accomplished because it was a controlled substance. And so, yeah, 12 started this process and taking medication, and of course, medication is a necessity when you don't have any other answers and your kid's not succeeding. And I'm not against medication. I ended up being on Ritalin for 22 years. And I ended up also at the highest dose of Ritalin. And so it was, without going into to too much detail, it was tough. It was hard on me. It was hard on my parents. School was terrible. And not, I have to be somewhat careful here because people I went to school with might listen to this. But I was severely bullied in school. It really between the age of about 6 and 17, severely bullied. And it was the whole thing, the whole childhood, looking back at it, was very difficult, and probably more from my perspective, because I wasn't perceiving reality correctly. But it was tough on my parents, tough on my teachers, lots of parent-teacher conferences, lots of getting in trouble for not paying attention in class and not doing homework. And they would say, "He's so smart. He can do so well on these tests, and he tests out of everything extremely well, but he's not paying attention and he's not turning in homework." And the obvious question is, why aren't you doing your homework? I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to that, other than I just can't. I don't want to, and I can't do it. I can't sit still. I can't pay attention. And I was overwhelmed. Looking back now, I know I was overwhelmed by the prospect of doing homework for 2 hours. But I didn't have language for that, so everybody thought it was a discipline problem, and so they applied typical discipline, and it didn't work at all, because that's not the problem with ADHD. It's not a discipline problem.
Well, and that's such a hard age too. I mean, that is just like the beginning of so many changes. And up to 12, like you see like growth physically, like as a parent, and you see like your kids growing and you're like, wow, the physical growth is monumental at that point, right? From not being able to do anything and be a floppy little baby to, skipping and running and riding bikes. But from 12 to 16, what's going on internally? It's like a, Maria Montessori called adolescence, she called it like the second, the second sex, second, I can't remember her exact phrase, but it was basically like a second, physical birth, but it's like internal. Like so many changes are happening that, that you can't tell as a, as an outsider, like all of the emotional changes, all the physical changes that are just happening with the wiring of your brain and the hormones. And it was really interesting. And I'm gonna have to find what that quote was, because it bugs me. I can't remember it.
Yeah.
So now you have four, and what are the ages of your children?
Yeah, so Evie, my daughter is 8. She just turned 8, and then my son, who you know, Mikey, he's actually, I love his name, Michael Joseph Mooney the fifth.
Oh.
He's 5, and then we have Remington Fox is 3, and then Jameson Hawk is 1. He just turned 1.
Hawk was the name I was going to choose for my son Gavin. That was going to be his first name, as in
First
Hawk,
name?
just
Oh
like,
my gosh.
yeah, Hawk Schindler. I mean, it sounds like a wrestling name,
That
you
is
know?
cool. Heck yeah.
Yeah. And that was my grandfather's nickname, was Hawk. And so it was interesting, because my mom, my aunt, if she's listening, I'm gonna oust her here, but she was like, "You're not gonna name my first grandbaby after a bird." And so I was going through the baby name book, because I was a teacher at that point. And so when you're a teacher for so many years, there's lots of names that can't be on the list, right? Like, I just couldn't do it.
Right.
But so I'm flipping through the book, flipping through the book, flipping, and I see Gavin, which is Welsh for little hawk.
Oh,
Yeah, so
nice.
that's
That's
why we
cool.
chose his name. Yeah,
You still got it in there.
yeah, I did, right? I slipped it in there. So let me ask you. So now that you had your own battle with as a learner, but now you become a parent, and how has your perspective of learning changed as once you became a parent, and even like as the seasons of parenting has changed from having one little tiny baby with Evie and now having four, and they're all at different ages? How has that affected you as both a parent and as a professional in terms of what your view of learning is?
Wow, man, that's such a good question. If there's such a an intertwining of those two things, the relationship between what I've learned professionally and what I've learned as a parent, and both things have helped me in the other. My professional education has been just so eye-opening, not only to understanding how kids learn and why they learn certain ways, but about behavior and why kids can and can't do certain things functionally when it comes to sports, when it comes to, focus and attention. So seeing that, understanding that, the neurological underpinnings of how a child functions, it really helped me know what to look for in my kids, in my, well, my daughter at first. I was looking for, how are her primitive reflexes, and are they integrating? Are they being suppressed correctly by the age of 1 year old? And as a parent, being able to look for those functional milestones was such an important thing, because I knew if this isn't doing what it's supposed to do, I know what to do to help it. And
Right.
it gave me, as a parent, a ton of grace for my daughter, who did have significant brain issues, functional issues, and also visual issues. She had strabismus. By the age of 3, we could tell that her left eye was just way outside of where it should be, drifting out. And so I was able to, as a parent, I was able to give her a lot of grace, a lot of mercy. And when she couldn't function, when she couldn't maintain emotional control, at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and throwing temper tantrums, I knew what it was. And so I, instead of getting
Right.
letting that affect me emotionally, I was able to see it for almost objectively. So I was able to see it as a clinician and as a parent. And
Right.
that gave us as a family, I think, a lot of peace, where oftentimes, when you've got a kid with those issues, there is no peace. And
Oh yeah, you're scared to death. I know, because I was in the same boat with Gavin. What
right.
are the can you explain to our listeners, you use the term primitive reflexes. Can you explain to them what that means? What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. Well, we all know that babies are born with very little function. They don't do very many things. But we do know that if you put your finger in a baby's palm, they will grab your finger reflexively, instinctively. And the reason for that is because of, just as an example, the grasp reflex. That's those nerves in the palm get stimulated, and the brain stem receives information from that touch, and it sends back information that says, close the hand. That's one example. We know that if you go to nurse a baby, when there's contact made between the mother and the baby's mouth, they start rooting, they start moving, making that little suckling noise that's so cute, and they turn their head and they kind of come lean into mom and they start nursing. That's a reflex. The baby has no choice. I mean, obviously, if they don't have the reflex, then they won't nurse, but the baby has no choice in that reflex. They're going to nurse when you stimulate those nerves. They're going to suckle. And then there's a whole list of them. And so primitive reflexes are infant reflexes. And what's supposed to happen is by the age of one, they're supposed to be gone. They're supposed to integrate into brain function and be suppressed so they don't show up in the rest of the development process. And when they're not suppressed correctly, what ends up happening is the rest of the brain's not able to lay down the layers of function correctly. And so you have these symptoms that show up in, say, posture or fine motor skills, or kids that, let's say a child that chews on things. It's because they have a retained rooting reflex. So they're trying to satiate those nerves around their mouth by chewing on their pens and pencils or fingernails or shirt sleeves or collars or whatever it is, putting stuff in their mouth constantly. It could be toys and rocks. And, my 1-year-old puts stuff in his mouth all the time because he has a rooting reflex and it's getting ready to go away. And he won't do that anymore because you're not supposed to put stuff in your mouth involuntarily. And so you have there's quite a few reflexes. And essentially what we want is to see those things integrate correctly. And then, of course, if they don't, then we literally just teach people how to do that. How do you train your child's brain to integrate those reflexes so they go away?
It's fascinating. I know that I was watching a documentary not too long ago, and I watched tons of like baby, like when I first started having children, like the TLC, like the Baby Story was like all the rage. So I like watched that religiously. I wanted to see every person having every baby so that I felt like I was prepared. But one of the things that they didn't show on that show at the time was after babies are born and they're placed on their mother's chest, low, not right up, but like that skin on skin when they're placed on the mother's stomach, and they actually will move their way up. They will inch their way up, and then they will start nursing. I mean, just like a kitten or a puppy would. And because you don't ever see that. I mean, you just see them like, especially if the baby is C-section too, but they're like whisked away. They're weighed, they're everything, they're wrapped up, they're put in the arms, they're like that. I just never even realized that babies did that, even as an adult, like when I was a parent myself, because in our culture and just what we see, that's not normalized as part of the birthing process. So yeah, I think it's fascinating to hear about all of these primitive reflexes. Is there a list somewhere, or a term, like is there a name of a list of the primitive reflexes, or if our listeners just Google primitive infant reflexes, will that just come up naturally, or is there, do you have a list of that you'll be able, could give me a link that I could put in our show notes for our listeners?
as you're asking the question, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, do I don't know where there's a comprehensive list anywhere of all the reflexes.
Well, that's your homework, Michael. Now you know, that's your homework.
I'm sure there's something out there somewhere. I mean, yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. If you Google infant reflexes or primitive reflexes, you're gonna find lots of information out there. I mean, it's a very common thing occupational therapists look at, physical therapists, pediatricians test them, neurologists test them. So it's a very common thing, and there's probably a ton of information out there. I haven't really gone and looked at it, to be honest with you, in as far as the internet is concerned.
Sure. All
But
right. So, listeners, give it a Goog. You'll find something.
yeah.
So, I'm really interested because, with what you learned about the way kids learn, when did you decide, or was it something you always like knew, no matter what, we're always going to homeschool? How did your family come to the realization that that was the right fit for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Man, that's a heavy one. My wife and I agreed very early on that we wanted to do homeschooling because two things. One, I wanted to be the primary voice in my kids' education, but not just academically, but culturally. I wanted to be able to have my kids grow up where, oh, okay. To be fair, as I said earlier, I was heavily bullied in school, and I just was like kind of maybe automatically like pulling away from that concept for my own kids. I don't want them to have to experience bullying. So we have our own bullying in our house. I'm kidding. We don't actually bully our kids, but we make that joke a lot because if they're going to be bullied, they should be bullied by someone who loves them. And
Right, I see, yeah.
so for me, it was the original decision was based on that. Now, that's not a great decision to that's not a great way to make a decision based on your own childhood like that, and not necessarily. But for my wife, she has known that she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and homeschool our kids since she was a kid.
Really?
She's incredible. And if you've got to spend any time with Ange, she is an incredible woman who has known since she was young that being a stay-at-home mom is her calling. And she is uniquely equipped for it. And I can't sing her praises enough because she's so good at homeschooling and so good at mothering, and gosh, she's the mom you wish you had. And I don't mean that against any other moms, but my goodness, watching her do it's a master class every day. And
That's awesome. She's super sweet. I got to spend just little snippets of time with her, but I could see her interacting, especially when with your now 3-year-old, but she was pregnant with your 1-year-old, your now 1-year-old, and but also dealing with the 3-year-old who was much littler, and she just always had a smile on her face, just calm, collected, I mean, maybe the bullying took place outside, at home. That's what happens, moms get they wait to give the eyes and the words when they get home. But no, seriously, she's super, super sweet. So your family is blessed to call her mama, that's for sure. Yeah, I asked that because I always wonder for, the people who have been homeschooled, a lot of people say, well, I was a homeschooled kid myself, and that was something that I wanted to do. I just am always interested to see how families, come to the decision of homeschooling. And it was never something that I thought we were gonna do. I mean, it was, our journey was very different. We had public school experience, we had private school experience, and then we just kind of came into homeschooling because of closing of one facility. And I had a kind of a 2-year window with my middle son. And I thought, well, if I homeschool him for the next 2 years, because he was gonna be with me in the program that we were gonna be in, then he'll just go on to, a local, private high school. And then lo and behold, he was like, that's not what I want to do, mom. I just want to homeschool through high school. And I was like, what? I was like, this is not what I thought I was going to be doing. But it's amazing how it all unfolds. And it's been such a blessing, especially for my younger daughter, who, we have two dyslexic learners, Gavin and Ava both see the world through the lens of dyslexia. And it's been a huge blessing to just be released to follow what their strengths are and help them to support the areas that are not easily, strong for them. but do it with that grace and not have it be a race. You know, grace over race is, I think, you know, it's we're no, there's not a winning. It's, you know, it's just, it's a marathon, not a sprint, you know, for us. So tell us, what do you do? Like, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, your calling? What is it that you do for families that are finding themselves with kids who are struggling?
So what we do, our company is called Delta Genesis. We're a nonprofit organization, and we essentially apply the concept of brain integration training. We do assessments, and we do workshops where we teach families how to help their child's brain function better from home. That's one of the primary things that we love to do is empower the families with the education so that they can go do these things without having to go out and drop $25,000, $30,000 on a bunch of professional help. Because at this point, getting help when as far as neurodevelopment is concerned is one of the most expensive things that a family can do. There are literally I was just do actually I did a lecture this morning in Columbia, Missouri. We're opening up a new location, and I did a lecture and we talked about how the average family with a child with ADHD spends 14,500 and some change dollars a year on intervention. That's the cost of illness for ADHD per child. And because that's a reality, parents need tools, parents need education, and parents need someone to guide them down a path of how can they help their kid from home and it not cost them an arm and a leg. So we do our workshops, and we actually charge, we charge $250, and it's a 4-hour workshop, and parents walk out of there, and we've had so much success. We've had kids who literally have had just life-changing success in a matter of, you know, 6 months of doing home exercises. So
That's
that's
fabulous.
kind of the primary thing that we do. We also have actual physical locations. And we do what we call brain integration training, where we take a multimodal approach to teaching the kids' brains how to function through exercises and through very specific protocols that really engage the concept of neuroplasticity, which is the brain's ability to change.
Yeah,
That
I
makes sense.
remember when Gavin started working with you so many years ago. One of the things that we saw that was really, you know, he was a late bike rider. That was something that, you know, he kind of struggled with, which is fairly typical with, you know, that balance and things like that with kids that have those, you know, brain issues. But then soon after he got done working with you, he actually started doing roller hockey, and he was really good at it, and he didn't start learning to skate until he was trying to remember, because I was, oh man, he was like six, I think. He was like six or maybe going on seven, and I remember he was so upset because all of his friends knew how to skate. And they had all gone to like tot skate when you know they were little, and he didn't because we, you know, I worked full time. And so here I'm trying to teach this, you know, he was like Bambi on ice because he was so tall and so big and so lanky. And I you know, was like, I think I was pregnant with Ava at the time. And it was just like, oh my goodness, like how is this all gonna come together? But it did, and it was amazing, and he loved it. He still talks about roller hockey today. Like he's you know 17 years old, he's the you know a body of a man, and you know, and he's just like, man, I wish I could go back and play some roller hockey, you know.
You know, as long ago as that was, I have vivid memories of working with you guys and working with Gavin. And I remember that he was playing hockey, and he was really, if I recall, again, this was eight or 9 years ago. I think it was 8 years ago, and he was It's really struggling. And I remember at one point you told me that he had improved in hockey so much that his coach started calling him Iron Man or something.
Yeah, he did. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, it was so funny. And that just lit him up so much that it was something that he was, that had been difficult and then he was good at. And it was what was so interesting, Michael, was that his little brother, who is always like kind of a little bit more like standoffish, he has to like observe things really, really close before he like puts his toe in things. He had been skating since he was like 2 or 3, because Gavin started, right? And so then the younger brother's like, well, I want to do that. And so when my younger son, he had all of the physical components and everything was like well-greased machine in terms of being on the ice, the rink, right?
Right.
But he was so afraid of actually going on for his very first game. And it was so funny because you have one child who couldn't do it physically. Like it was really hard to watch, like when he first started, because it was just like, oh my gosh, And then to see everything come together and see, his brain working and his body working and his, muscles working and just his tracking too, because he had a very similar issue with his eyes. And then you think about playing roller hockey, this tiny little puck, and you have vision issues,
Yeah.
but he was like in it to win it. And then the other son, I remember the coach saying, does he not know how to skate? I'm like, no, he's been skating since he was like 2.5 or 3 years old. That's not the issue here, but it was just very different, so for Gavin, that doing overcoming something that was really difficult and becoming good at it was such a confidence booster for him. And just as he stepped, as he stepped forward in other hard things. And yeah, he's getting ready to graduate. He's taking, we homeschool him as well. And he started taking some welding classes. I said to him, like, what do you want to do in life? And this is the beauty of homeschooling. You could either sit and have other people tell you what you need to take, or you could take the things you need and then also take the things you want. So he's been taking some college level courses at our local community college. And so he'll graduate with his welding certificate and his high school diploma this spring. And he's pretty pumped about that. So he's doing well.
That's
Yeah, it's
amazing. I love
exciting.
that. That's
It's ex
yeah.
it's exciting.
Super exciting.
Yeah, and you were part of that journey. You were part of helping unlock the things that, were kind of blocking his ability to move forward. So good on you, friend. Good on you.
Yeah, I'm honored to have even been able to participate in his life. I know it was really cool, and getting to talk to you and your husband back then. That was really great. You guys were, I remember you being so kind, and that was the first time I had ever really been in that kind of business environment. And you guys were just, let's say, the easiest people to work with, because not
Oh.
everybody is, but you guys were so much fun to work with, and you just made
I
it.
think the thing that I think is hard as a parent is that we had been battling. Like, I had been battling because I knew that something wasn't clicking. And then when you find something that's clicking and you know that you're on the same page with someone and they have your child's best interests, because before I had found you, we were driving like an hour, over an hour, like every Thursday for sensory, way over in Missouri, because we didn't have anything close here. So every Thursday I'd pick him up from school. We'd drive over an hour. He'd have an hour, a little bit over an hour of sensory therapy, and then we'd drive an hour back. And so to find something local that we believed in, that we knew our child would benefit in, it was a blessing, for us. And I think it really helped us to be better parents when we saw symptoms and situational learning challenges for when our daughter was coming up, because it gave us the ability to have that grace, like you were talking about. Well, what are some recommendations that you have? So if you have some parents who are listening, or people who are listening that say, hey, that kind of sounds like a struggle that my friend is having, or my family member is having, what do you recommend? What are those first steps for parents when they're, maybe a little worried that, I think my kid might be struggling with this, and this may not be on track with, typical, milestone meeting of milestones. What should they do?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And that's where we, I think we always start our conversation with parents, is we kind of want to help them come to consciousness about what are they really dealing with, which is because a lot of times we'll ask that question like, okay, so tell me about your kiddo. And they're like, well, he's very frustrating. And they have a hard time putting it in words that are not just frustration words. And so one of the things I tell people right off the bat is let's get this clearly defined. Let's make a list of academic issues, behavioral issues, how is he doing socially, and try to come up with a list that you could articulate in each category of life. What is he struggling with? And then rank it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is this problem compared to other kids, compared to his siblings, compared to your expectations? And you can rank it, each one of those things. And what that does is really helps moms and dads put in perspective what are they dealing with, and how does their child see that? The kiddo may be completely unaware that those problems exist. And that's an eye opener for a lot of parents. And that's really one of the first steps to the parents starting to have that grace for their kid is and to say, I'm going to let them off the hook because they have all these things going on. Clearly, this is not my child misbehaving and trying to drive me nuts. And when you come into that, you go, huh, maybe I got to just step back from yelling and screaming and disciplining.
Because we've
Absolutely.
this was an area that I was a writing teacher. I mean, for 20 years I taught language arts. And so then you have, children who struggle with writing. They struggle with getting those words on paper. And I remember specifically the day that I realized, and the light bulb kind of came on with me, that Gavin especially, he because he did public school for so long, like he recognized that his ability to spell was so drastically different than his peers. And so when he would be answering questions that were written, he would write very simple answers. They would be correct, but they would be very simple, and the word choices would be so elementary, even when he was in middle school. And so a lot of times the teachers would think, well, he's not very smart. He's not very bright. He's just, I mean, he's a real sweet kid, but like when you could see what he was writing, it was so simple. And when we realized that he was wanting to do his best work, and he knew when he wrote those simple words that those were always spelled right, even if it wasn't as deep of the thought that he had in his brain, getting it out on paper, if he didn't have something to spell check it. And I remember in high school, he actually had a teacher, and we had gotten some accommodations, and this was before we started homeschooling him. He had a project that they had to work on, and it was supposed to be all handwritten, which I didn't agree with, but whatever. But one of the accommodations was he could type his. And so what I had him do was, just kind of jot down and brainstorm, even if it's misspelled, on paper, so that you can kind of show that you're getting your ideas from you, and then go ahead and put them on, the Word document or whatever, and start typing. And so he would. And so the teacher actually came up to him, and he had been working and doing all the spell checking, all the spell checking. And so when she came up, she actually accused him of plagiarizing.
Oh my
And
gosh.
she's like, is this your work? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, I want you to prove it to me. Prove that you're not just copying and pasting, cutting and pasting, which kids do. I mean, that happens. But he was so like embarrassed. And the and he and he and I was really shocked that he even thought to do this, because I think I would have panicked, like, oh, this is my work. But he was using Google Docs, so he could use the back button, like the back arrow. And every time you go back, right, it then shows you what it was before you did that next change. And then the paragraph got like more and more red letters, more and more red underlining, da 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 da. He could go all the way back to show her, like, this is what I've written, but I've been like, this is the 10th step I've done to go back and check all my spelling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it was just like, but it was so, for him, he came home and I remember I said, how was your day? And he's like, ah, it's okay. And you know what he did though? After that, he finished that project and he wrote every single page by hand. What he would do is he would type it all up and then he would write it out, because he did not want her to think he wasn't doing the work that everybody else was doing. It took the kid 100 times longer to do that project.
Wow.
And that was the year that I threw it back to him and I said, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be like this. You can hack your own learning. You know
Yeah.
what kind of a learner you are. You know what works for you. So let's just cut to the chase and say, what do you want your rest of your education career to look like? Because you get to decide.
Yeah. Oh, I
And
love that.
yeah, and that's when he was just like, and I said, I'm releasing you. You get to pick. If you want to stay here and this is what you want your next 2 years to be like, then we're all in. But you got to be all in, and I'll be all in, and we'll be all in together. It will be grueling, and we will hate life for 2 years, but we will do it if this is where you want to stay. But there is a whole world out there. And that's when he decided that he wanted to do welding, and we went and signed him right up, and he got in no problem. So,
Wonderful.
it was amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. Good
Yeah.
on you guys too. Holy moly.
Well, and you know, you just, it's like one of those, it's a step of like, I feel, and I'm a true believer that, you know, God places people in our lives at certain times. And I've used it in another conversation, call it breadcrumbing. And I had had a friend who I had had her son, like in middle school, and he struggled, very similar, sounds like what you were struggling with when you were an adolescent. And so that he started high school, still just really struggling. And they pulled him out of high school and they signed him up for dual credit at the local community college. And he was able to start welding and he loved it. And he
Wow.
just blossomed. And so I heard that story like 3 years before what we were dealing with my son. And I feel like it was just like a little, it's like kind of like showing a little card, kind of like, you know, you're playing, you know, poker and someone shows you their hand. You know, and you're like, oh, and they got a couple aces over there, huh? And I feel like that was what it was for us, that I was like, you know, I remember there was this other person that did something else, and let's look into that, you know. But a lot of parents don't know, you know, they don't know, and they think too, like, what happens if they don't stay and they don't keep like IEPs or 504s? Like, if I don't keep my kid where they are they not going to be able to get services for different things? And I just want to tell my listeners that, you know, we had an outdated IEP, but because we had a diagnosis, that's all that mattered. And he's getting college level accommodations that just kind of level a playing field. And it's, you know, the support is there. You just have to, you know, be brave to just walk boldly and, you know, be that warrior for your kid.
Yeah.
Because you're the one who knows them best. So,
Absolutely.
what is it like being a dad of four? Can you tell what are your biggest joys right now?
Wow, man, that's a good question. I don't know. That's I haven't thought about it. So, you know, maybe a good contrast to draw here is that I didn't like kids all that much until I started working with them, and then I really started liking them when I had some. And so I know, if I'm being brutally honest here, I mean, this is just authentic me.
Yep.
I was not a kid person. I didn't care, I don't think. Maybe I think when I was a kid, maybe I was like, yeah, maybe I'll have kids. And then I went through my life and I was like, nope, I don't like kids. Kids are mean. And so there was just a just my own visceral sort of reaction there. So for me, thank God my first kid was a was my daughter, because even with the difficulty in the beginning, she taught me how to love. Man, I don't, whew, that makes me emotional. She is, she's just one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And then having three boys after that, has just been the most amazing thing that there's no, like, I don't know if there's a right way to frame it up. It's changed me so much, and it's given me this a chance to recognize how insignificant most things in life really are, compared to the opportunity, the privilege of training up children and giving them a life. And man, what I'm about to say is going to sound kind of graphic, but I just read a book a couple days ago, and one of the chapters, this guy's talking about how there's orphans in orphanages around the world who literally at 3 years old have to take for care of themselves and feed themselves, and they get very little love and very little affection, and almost none. And he tells this story about this particular, he was in an orphanage, and he watched one child who had a hurt leg and couldn't really walk at 3 years old, and couldn't get to the table to eat dinner. And so another 3 year old tried to grab a dish that had food in it, and threw it on the ground, and or dropped it on the ground, and it broke. And the child scooped up the food and brought it over to the other child. We're talking about 3 year olds here. So I have one of
Wow.
those. I know what they're capable of. These kids are taking care of each other and loving each other in the most selfless way. And that's a reality for kids all over this planet, of not having a loving home. And Ange and I get to provide that for kids who are, well, our biological children. And as simple as that sounds, what an incredible opportunity that we have. That and the, it's like, it's almost like, well, yeah, duh, but this is America. It's not that, yeah, duh, around the world, you know.
Right.
It's not that
No.
simple.
No, nothing is. Nothing is that simple. I'm doing some international mission work right now in Sri Lanka, and it's just been mighty work. The way that God has brought everything together, it needs to be a whole podcast of its own, but it's actually going to be a book of its own because it's just amazing, life-changing kind of work. But what it's really helped me is it's a connection that I have with this person, and they just even just daily stuff, even just like things that it's just so the juxtaposition of differences, of like my friend, he works as an elevator technician. So it's a I mean it's a legitimate job, and he travels an hour each way on a motorbike, in a rural, rural area to a major city. And the amount of money that he makes in a whole month of working to support his family of five is what some people spend on their cell phone bill a month.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And so the work that I'm doing there, is just it's so humbling to me because it reminds me of, and that's why I wrote the book, All the Things, because it's, before I became a parent, I thought if you have literally all the things, right? You got the diapers, you got the toys, you got the books, you got the glider, if you have all the things, you're hitting the ground running. Like this is going to be, like it's going to be good, right? And then as you're parenting, and what kind of came to me when you're talking is you've been changed not like we say, like in on a cellular level, like, you know, our cells can actually like change, you know, with different things. Like you as a parent have been changed on a cellular level.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That's a great
Yeah.
concept.
Yeah. And so I feel like that when, you know, I wrote the book, like it's the things that are the most important. They're not things that you can hold and touch at all. You know, they're those concepts, those are those feelings, those are those emotions, those are the, you know, teaching your children to be, you know, that the kindness and the love and, you know, that warrior spirit to go forward and to, you know, and like do what you're doing. Like
Yeah.
your kids are going to see what you're doing because my kids are seeing what I'm doing and those are planting those seeds. You're doing great work, my friend. Great work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do want to say that the COVID situation, I meant to bring this up and I don't want to leave it out. The COVID situation has interfered with so many people's lives and brought people home and stuck them there. And the people that have kids who are getting services and they're, you know, the school is helping so significantly during the day. Now those parents are having to deal with that. And they're going,
Yes.
oh my goodness, this is worse than I thought. And so what I was saying about making that comprehensive list objectively without emotion for those parents is so important. To trying to come to an objective conscious place of what is your kiddo dealing with, that step is so good because it takes that sense of my kid's got a character problem and just you can flush that down the toilet and or a personality problem. That's not what it is. And you can when you write it out, you can see that this is not my kid's personality. This is not my kid's character. This is not a real problem with the person of my child, and it's not their fault. And then the parents can look in the mirror and go, "It's not my fault either." And I think that's such an important thing, such an important step. It doesn't actually, you know, obviously that's not a protocol for how to engage neuroplasticity, but it you have to. Allow yourself as a parent to release the shame or guilt so many parents feel when their kid is struggling, as because they naturally we want to own it and say, what did I do wrong? And the answer is nothing. You did nothing wrong. So you can
Right.
start with that list and then just release yourself and your child from the responsibility of it. And that will automatically start to improve just a little bit. At least your stress level can start to come down a little bit because you can release some of that inner tension or turmoil. So that's just such an important thing. And then, you know, beyond that, seek help. Find somebody who can look for an objective reason that your child is struggling. So this is something that I feel like is just such an under-talked about concept. There's an article I just read from Neuroscience News magazine, and it's a psychiatrist being interviewed, and he says, with everything else in the world, medical issues, we look for objective measurements, objective realities. Or observations, and we make decisions based on that. But with ADHD, Asperger's, autism, bipolar depression, trichotillomania, tics, Tourette's, all that stuff, learning disabilities, we use subjective observations and secondhand information to make medical diagnoses. And it's a psychiatrist saying this in the article, and it's to me, such an intellectual honesty for him to be able to say that. And so one of the things that we pride ourselves in with Delta Genesis is that we do objective stuff. And I'm not trying to just say come to Delta. There's other places out there you can go that have objective measurements that they can take and I don't mean brain scans, but measurements of other functions. Get that done. Get that, at least have that knowledge from an assessment from somebody who does this, because that will give you so much clarity and so much peace and so much hope. And that I would say is one of the best pieces of advice that I can give somebody. Just get some objective answers about your kiddo.
That's so important. It really, really is. I would love to, for our listeners, as we close, I am going to have your link for Delta Genesis on the show notes at KristenLeeSchindler.com. And then I also, Michael, if you could send me the link for that article, I can put that in the show notes too. So then people could read that article themselves. I think that's fascinating information. You know, the more we know, the more we grow. And you know, I'm a much better parent at 17 years old in with my son than I was when he was seven, just because I didn't know. And being willing to learn and to learn from people and professionals like you, I'm so happy. I'm so grateful for you to have spent the time with us today. So thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure. And I'll be sure to send you the article and the link. We are a .org, not a .com.
Okay.
A very, very important distinction, because DeltaGenesis.com is beard oil.
Oh, hey, it probably works well, but yeah, we want the other.
Yeah, .org. Yeah.
.org.
But yeah, we'll definitely, I'll get that stuff to you. And anybody who needs help, we are, because of the nature of our business, of being a nonprofit, we will talk to anybody about anything with no obligation. They don't, there's not a sales pitch. We just educate. Like you just said, education is key. And we just want to make sure everybody has enough education to make an educated decision for their child, for their family. And then that's probably educating people is one of the primary things that we are exist to do. And so anybody has any questions, our website is there, deltagenesis.org. They're welcome to call us. They're just call and talk, and we'll answer questions, you know, to the degree that we can. And, you know, there's going to be, usually it's dads that are kind of skeptical of anything when it comes to their kiddo. And so I say, let's get the dads on the call too. Let's make sure that we're having an authentic conversation where we can bring even skepticism into the light, because there's nothing wrong with being skeptical. It's a good
right.
thing. Skepticism is healthy. So I definitely encourage people to do that. And of course we do most things online, or a lot of things anyway, online because of the COVID situation. So we have learned to evolve into that.
And yeah, I got to pivot. Got to pivot.
No doubt. No doubt. Yes. So, yeah. So thanks. Thank you so much for having me, talking to me, and I'm really grateful, and I'm looking forward to talking to you further about other things. And
yes, and, yes. We'll have you back on as a different guest. You can, I'll let you pick your topic next time. Cause I picked your topic this time. So you do your homework is to, you know, decide what you want to bring to the table next time. And then, we'll go from there. So you have a blessed day, Michael. Tell the family I said hi. Tell that lovely mama hi, and give those kiddos some kisses and hugs, okay?
You bet. Thanks so much.
I'm so glad that you guys were able to join us today and hear from Michael. He is just such a blessing to the people that he's helping. And I know, because I've been there. I've been there struggling when I'm just like, something is not right. There has to be an explanation for why learning is so hard for this kiddo. And I just am so thankful that Michael is there and he has the resources and the tools. So I encourage you, if you are struggling and you just want to have someone who has an unbiased opinion and can bring some information to the table and lay it all out there, call him today. You know, call Delta Genesis. Check out my show notes on KristenLeeSchindler.com under the podcast tab, and get some answers for your family and give yourself some space for that grace. If you felt that today this podcast is bringing you value, I just ask that you subscribe and follow on whatever platform that you find helpful for podcast listening. And also you can check out my Patreon page, All the Things, and give a little bit of support. Let me continue to do this work and pour into others. I would greatly support it and greatly appreciate your support. There's multiple levels of giving, and there's different things of ways I can give back to you for being a person of support and encouragement. So as I close, I just want to remind you that your message matters and you have a story to tell. And just like Michael took something from his past of being a struggling learner and having issues where he himself struggled, we all have those things in life. We all have those things that are our messes that we feel that we're in at one time, and we have a chance to turn those around and make those our message. And I'm so glad that Michael has done just that and embraced it, and now he's pouring into the lives of others. So just remember, your message matters. Get out there and share it. People are praying for what you have to bring to the table.